Chapter 14. The Podcast. I never really understood the history between Belvin Perry and his devoted mignon Lisa Munyon until I listened to the nauseating podcast Munyon insisted on having with Perry. Since Perry's tyrannical rule, I had been through two chief judges, and other than the firing of Jezebel, I never heard Perry's name mentioned again other than someone making a joke about him. And then, boom, out of the blue, Munyon can barely wait to be elected chief so she can ogle over her mentor, Belvin Perry. Teehee Podcast is posted on the court's website until judges got feared my publisher's promotional audio that they took not only Perry's podcast offline, but they removed every podcast on their entire website. Boo-hoo. If it's been taken down after the publication of this book, I'll post it on my website. When you listen to this podcast, you can hear the love Munyon has for this man. She simply gushes over a guy who cheated on his wife with a court administration employee, and the state had to settle the lawsuit. She knew that Jezebel was a Perry sexual conquest, why he was married, yet she still admired this dickweed. Janice Williamson's sex story was the only encounter that made it into the public view. Perry's affair with Jezebel and many others never came to the surface until I wrote this book. Once my public record requests are fulfilled by the Ninth Circuit, more names will appear, unless court admin executives lie and say the files I'm requesting never existed. And this is a real possibility. If these remaining court administration executives admit to keeping secret files on judges, they're gone. No judge will ever trust them or have them work for them. So I don't expect to get much from the current administration. However, visit my website and I will post all public record request folders I get from the Ninth Circuit Court along with my own human resource folder. Why not? I would be interested in how much shit went into my folder without my knowledge. And I have a lot of requests that will rock their world. Now back to the podcast. Listening to this podcast made me sick. I had to stop the audio every once in a while to choke down the bile surging up into my throat. The reason I'm focusing on this interview with Perry is that Munyon fired me in a single heartbeat. It was so fast that she didn't consider the impact against the court, the impact against my staff, the impact against court administration, the impact against the reputation of our court, or the impact on all the technology it took me a lifetime to build for our circuit, but most importantly to Perry and Munyon, the impact against their legacies. It was an impulsive and reckless decision based on her devotion to Perry, and nothing else. But more on that during the chapter, The End of Me. In the two decades that Lisa Munyon had spent on the bench, I never heard her mention a single word about Mr. Munyon, whoever the fuck that is. But Belvin Perry, you didn't have to preemptively flip her pink bean to get her mouth yapping about this wonderful man. God damn, what the fuck happened between them that would conjoin them so firmly at the taint? This reminds me of a joke my father told me. He asked me, "Did you hear about the twin Siamese babies that weighed 100 pounds each at only 3 months?" Punchline? They were joined at the asshole. My theory is Judge Munyon's mouth was joined to Perry's asshole, and Perry's mouth was joined to Munyon's asshole. The technical term for that is a closed ecosystem. I love educating you. The infatuation Munyon has for Perry resembles a prison romance. Take the most repugnant prisoner you can find, mix in a little sadistic sex and sprinkle with a degree of male charisma, and bingotti bangotti boo, you have yourself a love affair made in hell. Munyon's impetuous actions were clearly made by a woman in love. Did she consider the consequences to her family? What family? No one had ever heard a mention of her family. She was fixated on power, and family doesn't really come into play when you're focused on that selfish goal. A woman who will do anything asked of her based on love is rare. But Munyon was a rare bird indeed. When you listen to this podcast, the love she has for Perry is overwhelmingly evident. And the love she feels for Perry made her make fateful decisions that would embarrass the entire state of Florida judicial system. In my farewell letter to my judges and all the judges in Florida, I ended with the phrase that Munyon lit a match in a dynamite factory. Yet, once you finish reading this firsthand account, you may feel she pressed the big red button and vaporized the integrity of the entire Florida court system for the next 50 years. Foremost realize that these podcasts the Ninth Circuit makes are a major waste of taxpayers' money. The Ninth Circuit actually has a full-time audio-video editor to produce this silly stuff. They do it so judges feel that court administration is going beyond their expected duties to make the Ninth's judges look good and drive forward their election campaigns. The Ninth Circuit spends a ridiculous amount of time updating all their social media accounts for no particular reason, except it provides judges, who no one knows or cares about, limited exposure. In reality, no one listens or reads or ingests these things, except other judges in the circuit. The time spent is akin to setting money on fire. Perry and Munyon listen to their own podcasts over and over. My kids didn't listen to them because they have a life that doesn't involve self-centered, older-than-dirt judges who have reached the level in their career that is considered mostly inconsequential. If you listen to a single podcast the Ninth Circuit produces, then you officially have no life. There are a million YouTube streams out there that are so much more interesting than listening to a bottom-feeder judge talking about how interesting he or she is. You would have to pay me to listen to one of these, and you couldn't pay my kids enough to listen to it. They might pretend they're listening, but they have switched streams after the first 30 seconds to something that is actually interesting. Here is a list of tasks court administration performs that utilizes an untold number of county and state work hours, and the only purpose is to help judges with their election campaigns. Ninth Now is the Ninth Circuit's very own free streaming app available on all Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, and Android TV devices. Why does a court need its own TV channel? Ridiculous. Ninth unplugged audio interviews with judges and staff of the Ninth Judicial Circuit Court. Get to know the people who provide valuable service to the court and community. Two interviews drop the first Wednesday of every month. I bet you simply can't wait to hear about the piles of paper Susie Liu processed today. Brown Bag Luncheon Series Circuit Judges Tanya Wilson and Bob Egan host a series of educational sessions for attorneys. Past sessions have included topics such as attorney fees, courtroom pet peeves, the do's and don'ts of closing arguments, case law updates, how to prepare for and take an expert deposition. Two things that are worth noticing with this taxpayer money waste. First, it's hosted by not one but two judges who get their names out to the public to help their campaigns. The second thing is if I were to ever attend one of these, you have my permission to kill me and put me out of my misery because it's apparent I have no life whatsoever. Courted. Are you interested in having a member of the Ninth Judicial Circuit Court present in your classroom? We have lesson plans available for K through 12. Contact us to get more information. Yeah, we really need more kids to become fucking attorneys in Florida. The 100,000 active attorneys we have now isn't enough. What's that like, one attorney per every 217 Florida residents? Here's where I would like to throw in some attorney jokes, but you probably heard them all. Okay, here is one that pertains to Perry. Why does the Florida Bar Association Code of Ethics prevent sex between lawyers and their clients? To prevent clients from being billed twice for essentially the same service. Inside the Courts is a free 4-week class that gives you a behind-the-scenes look at the court system. In addition to providing the public with an up-close examination of the workings of the judicial branch. Of course, all the speakers are judges, and why do you have to know the inner workings of a court? Who gives a fuck? Exhibit A Family Court Art Challenge. The Exhibit, a Family Court Art Challenge, is an annual event supported through a partnership between the Ninth Circuit's Family Court and Orange County Public Schools. Each year, students are given the opportunity to express themselves through the creation of a special piece of art that represents what that year's theme means to them. Hold on, I thought we were running a court system. Now we're hosting art contests? Maybe we should have some barbecue competitions. How about our own show, Dancing with Judges? We can even show it on our own TV channel. Florida's Ninth Circuit Court also updates its social media AC counts regularly. Facebook, Twitter, Vimeo, LinkedIn, Instagram, YouTube, and others. When do they find time to actually do any work other than promoting their judges? If you were to visit other courts' websites, you will view concise information that matters to their citizens. Court schedules, holiday dates, department locations, office numbers, filing information, etc. These respected circuits believe that using the court infrastructure, websites, servers, internet bandwidth, and social media, along with county and state employees' salaries to promote their circuit's judges, is actually working on the judges' election campaign. courts shouldn't even allow a judge to post their bio on the court's website. If the judge wants to post their bio, have them buy their own website. Else, post the bio of the attorney running against them during the election. The Ninth Circuit spends all sorts of time taking photos of its judges. Why is this necessary? You can't declare judicial security issues, then post a photo showing what every judge in the court looks like. It's like telling a pissed-off family member, "The judge that sentenced your son to death looks like this and walks to lunch every day." Why can't court admin just do their jobs and provide non-proprietary information citizens require, rather than holding the judge's hand as voters walk into the booth? What you won't see on other courts' websites are lists of programs that are designed to do nothing more than promote their own judges and support their election campaigns. But this is the only job Ninth Circuit judges care about. Legal stuff? Not so much. Running the courthouse and efficiently scheduling courtrooms? Nope, not feeling it. Court administration employees' happiness? Who again? Promotional stuff? Yeah, now that works for them just fine. I think the next service the Ninth Circuit court admin should offer is a free election campaign service. Wait, all of those outreach programs are free election campaign services. Strike that. I never participated in any of this nonsense because there was too much liability involved with it. Say the wrong thing on the record, and you're gone. What's strange is you might not interpret something you said as the wrong thing to say, but a judge may view your statement differently. Therefore, for me in particular, considering how much Perry and Munyon hated me and wanted me gone, there was no upside to performing as a dancing bear on one of their court clown shows. Everything you say will be used against you. The podcast, jumping back to Munyon's first podcast, she named it Belvin Perry, a legal pioneer. I certainly can't argue with that. Perry broke all sorts of legal barriers and laws and commandments. He brought to the court a man whose only interest was getting laid and having everyone in his selective orbit tongue his brown eye. I've seen photos of young Belvin Perry, and he's no better looking than old Belvin Perry. A guy with Perry's face and spherical body doesn't get laid unless he has money or power. Making big bucks as a public servant doesn't generate the cheddar that the dollhouse woman melts over. No, in order to fulfill his poonhound quota, he had to acquire power. Power is money. Am I right? Just for the record, I'm not black. I wasn't raised during segregation, as was Perry, so I don't have a clue why he favored having affairs with white women instead of black women. But he did. Janice Williamson was white. Jezebel was white. Munyon was white. Most of the court administration women Perry victimized were white. Once Munyon's podcast got started, the first thing Munyon focused on was the amazing fact that Perry was born in Orlando. She wants to know what that was like. Really? It's freaking Orlando. We're not talking about Casablanca or Venice or Paris. It was like every other city in Florida until Disney bought a big chunk of it. Lots of oranges and sand and sunshine. It's not special or interesting unless you are the handful of listeners who recognize ancient Orlando streets Perry mentions. Oh, I've heard of that street. That grew a lot of oranges on that street back at the beginning of time. Before then, it was all sand. Who cares? Prior to the invasion of Disney, the indigenous people who lived in Orlando were the Ayes, Apalachee, Calusa, Timucua, and Tocobago, and the only ones I recognize are the tribes who have streets named after them. Go figure. Perry mentions that his upbringing was based on these guiding principles. Family, community service, faith, hard work. Let's start with the family thing. This man cheated on his wife with more women than I have fingers and dicks. I hate to think about what Perry actually did with his fingers, but I'm sure Munyon can tell you. Next, there is a good chance that Perry will be doing some additional community service after this book goes on sale. So we have that covered. Look for an ancient guy, dying in the heat while he's picking up trash on the side of the I-4. Be sure to wave and yell, "Hi, Belvin!" Faith for Perry equals, "Thou shall fuck anything that has a hole and a heartbeat." Heartbeat optional. End of his faith bullshit. Hey, just a thought, Belvin. If you want to stick your dick in anything that presents prone, then they have this new thing out there called divorce. Give your current wife half your shit and a little sanity and go bonkers. Fuck a goat. Stick your dick into a hole in a wooden fence. Deeply penetrate the blowhole of a dauphin. The world is your oyster. Rock on, single dude. Perry did hard work. He worked endlessly, long hours to make everyone in court administration go completely bananas. I was the visionary. Perry was the asshole that took credit for my visions. Then we move on in the podcast when Perry brings up the fact that his dad was a cop. Well, cops aren't really popular these days, even black cops. Recently, 5 black cops beat a black citizen to death. Maybe Perry should nix the cop thing and lie like he always fucking did and instead say his father was a brain surgeon. I really don't think anyone is going to research what his father did. I don't think anyone really gives a shit. I mean, how many of you looked up what Perry's dad did before reading this book? Oh, no one. On we go. If Perry's father was a brain surgeon, that would be a startling segregation success story. If Perry's father was a brain surgeon, I would have to come off my high horse and admit that was a major achievement in the day. His father would have my complete respect. Cop? Not so much. Since Perry and Munyon appear fixated on Perry's father, let's get some facts straight. I pulled a public records request in Belvin Perry Sr. and discovered he was not the first black cop hired by the Orlando Police Department. The first black cop's name is Lint Richard Jones. Jones wasn't allowed to patrol the streets alone, so a few months later the department hired Perry's father. I guess back then they didn't dig deep into black candidates' qualifications. What were the qualifications back then to become a cop? High school diploma? Nope. Belvin Perry Sr. never made it past the 10th grade. Tall and powerful? Nah, at 5'9" and about 160 pounds, he certainly wasn't the huge physical specimen you would think they would hire to partner with Jones, especially since they weren't allowed to carry guns. While Jones went on to achieve the rank of lieutenant, Perry Sr. remained a patrolman all his life. Why? He took the sergeant's test 3 times and never won a promotion. In other words, he failed. Basically, he's stupid like Perry Jr. They probably didn't have a grammar checker back then. Then in 1974, Perry Sr. was suspended for 28 days for conduct unbecoming an officer. Considering the apple not falling far from the tree, what do you guess got Perry Sr. removed from the force? Stealing stuff from people he arrested which never made it to the evidence room? Abuse of power or some sexual indiscretion like his son, Perry Jr.? I paid for all the public records of Belvin Perry Sr. and posted them on my website. Now, you're interested in Perry's father. You're welcome, Jr. Not exactly the brain surgeon thing I was hoping for, which would have made Munyon's podcast really pop. Perry should have lied. Perry goes on to say that his parents had their way of teaching by excellence, leading by example. He said they taught by perfection, which is apparently a lesson in life that Perry missed. During that critical lesson, he was probably fucking a goat in the backyard, you know, honing his skills for his future career. If indeed his parents insisted on perfection, how in the hell did Perry Jr. veer so far off that course which was so diligently laid out for him by his pristine parents? Munyon brings up segregation as if she lived it, like it was an important part of her privileged white life. Perry talks about going to downtown Orlando and seeing these wonderful hot dogs being made at Woolworth's lunch counter, yet he couldn't have one. But a few years later, he could have one, and that was the best hot dog he ever had. Yeah, that's gotta fuck you up. Waiting on a hot dog that long. God damn, I believe I waited that long to get my quarter pounder with cheese at McDonald's yesterday. Full props, however. Not getting a hot dog would make anyone go crazy. I'm sure there were a lot of mass murderers during that time who would have simply killed for a hot dog. Do I sense a level of outrage pertaining to my interpretation of the hot dog debacle Perry had to endure? Don't worry, calm down. Perry overcame the hot dog thing, pulled himself up by his jockstrap, and became an attorney and a psychopath. I'm sure the world is much better now. Perry mentions that his parents suggest he either become a doctor or a lawyer. I guess Indian Chief was not an option. Perry relates that he got blown out by complicated medical classes and math, so decided to step down the knowledge curve and become a Florida attorney. He says his dad wanted one of his sons to be a lawyer and one of them a doctor. In true Perry nature, he went for the easy bell to ring. I still can't figure out who took the bar exam for him. Perry shares some wisdom his father told him.
Don't let anyone define you. You define yourself.
Well, Perry certainly defined himself as seen within these pages.
Don't listen to the outside noise.
Which Perry never did. He never listened to a single suggestion from court administration or anyone else for that matter.
Don't ever grow a false sense of your importance.
Okay, that one is way too easy to comment on. His father told him,
"You shouldn't look down on people at a lower station in life."
Well, Perry didn't look down on them. He sexually harassed them and then fired them. Perry was the most arrogant, egotistical person I have ever met, so listening to this really made my skin crawl. Munyon asks Perry why he became chief judge. Short answer, why did Trump want to become president? Power, money, and bitches. It's simple stupid. However, Perry gives some convoluted story like he never wanted to be chief judge. It was thrust on him because all the other judges recognized how great he was. Oh, fuck me. That smarmy little motherfucker. Too bad slapping the shit out of someone is a crime. Wait, I think it's legal for Will Smith. Maybe I can give him Perry's address and offer him another Oscar. Munyon states that most of the public doesn't know that the Ninth Circuit is a leader in technology. Ah, I can sense that my name is about to be announced. Here it comes. Her next sentence will be, "Our amazing Chief Technology Officer, Brett Arquette, instituted all our wonderful technology." Nope, her next sentence was, "A lot of that is due to Perry's vision." Perry's vision? Really? This is a man who thought he could hide his Bitcoin under his mattress. One rule I found that is cut in stone is judges will never give credit to those who deserve it. Perry took total credit for all the technology I brought to the court. If you believe that Perry was responsible, you would have to believe that he actually understood technology, which he didn't. Perry made his password the word incorrect, because if he typed it in wrong, his computer reminded him, "Your password is incorrect." After years of never getting credit for all the tech I brought to the court, I guess it shouldn't upset me, but it still does. An example of how one hand washes the other, Perry states that,
"I was blessed to have a judge who believed in new technology named Lisa Munyon."
Wow, I couldn't see that coming. The funny thing is, I never saw them down in my computer room installing software or upgrading servers or fixing the network or writing code. But lo and behold, they take credit for tech everything. We're getting near the end of this podcast, and I'm really happy because I can't take any more of this pure, unadulterated bullshit. Munyon asks what Perry would want people to know about the responsibilities of being the chief judge. Perry responds by saying that people don't know how much is on the plate of the chief judge. In actuality, there is nothing on their plate. Court administration runs the courthouse. Other than being the last say in who is getting hired and fired, the chief judge writes administrative orders and assigns judges to divisions. I know in other circuits the chief judge actually carries a docket, but not in the Ninth. In our circuit, the chief judge gets bored and then begins to meddle in court administration duties and operations. This always causes delays due to meaningless meetings and discussions. If any new technology is successful, like a new software that comes online and makes a huge difference in production, then the chief judge takes full credit for it. If it goes wrong and they were the ones who selected the software, then it was the dumbasses in MIS that couldn't get it to work. Better fire someone, post haste. Perry mentions that a good vacation was 48 hours without a phone call from court administration. However, court administration was dealing with fires Perry started all the time, night and day. Perry insisted that they never make a move or decision on putting out those fires unless they called him. I would turn that around and say that it was considered a good vacation for court administration employees without a call from Perry in 48 hours. It was a brutal work environment, as was this podcast to listen to. This is the last chapter of the free listen. For the price of a cup of coffee, you can listen to the last four chapters, which are The End of Jezebel, The End of Me, The End of My Story, and The Aftermath. I hope you dug listening so far. Thank you for your time and support.